Bycie na InfoShare jest jedną z niewielu okazji, w których można spotkać ludzi, którzy są zainteresowani tym, co za technologicznym horyzontem.
To najlepsze miejsce, żeby się spotkać. InfoShare tak naprawdę jest początkiem wielu rozmów i wielu relacji biznesowych.
Przyjeżdżałem tutaj zawsze, żeby posłuchać innych, zainspirować się ich historiami. Wychodziłem stąd zawsze z taką nową dawką energii. Zdecydowanie polecam. To jest moja ulubiona konferencja w Polsce.
Hello everyone, welcome to Just Join IT channel, where we meet to share some ideas, news and discuss hot topics with people from around the world focused on IT. And this is the second live session related to InfoShare conference, which will happen this year in 2 weeks. And today we have a special guest. Say hi to Sean Wong, called Swix, right? Is it correct?
Yes. That's my English and Chinese initials, so also my online identity.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about the genesis of your nickname, but yeah, this is cool.
It's just my initials. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't expect that, but just a brief introduction for everyone. You will be here at the conference, and you will be talking about epic client server battle of our time. This is like very, very nice title. Can you give us a glimpse of what we can find during your presentation?
Sure. So as a front end or full stack web developer, I find that a lot of the innovation in what we're trying to do in pushing the boundaries is to try to move rendering to the front end with single page apps, or move rendering to the back end with server-side rendering. Those techniques have existed for many, many years, but really what has been a source of a lot of debate is where the rendering happens and where the data lives. Because ultimately the best user experience comes from a mix of performance and from the smaller things like offline first capabilities, right? So if you want to design application that is offline first, that has optimistic updates. So when you update, when you do an entry, you have an instant response instead of waiting for your data to go to the server and come back. Then you need a local clone of your database on your device. And that is the smart client approach. But other people have been working on alternative approaches. It's the smart server approach, which is don't do anything on the client. Send all your data directly to the server and re-render on the server and then send the new HTML back. So that's Phoenix Live View, React Server components, all the new stuff that is that people are very excited about. So basically, I wrote a blog post discussing the differences between these things. And I think this is a really good paradigm to think about the kind of architecture that you need for your next project or your next application, because these are two sides of a spectrum and you have to choose. There's no in between.
Yeah, and so no in between and basically no silver bullet that will solve all the problems, right?
Yeah, annoyingly enough. I would say I really like, so basically the TLDR, I'll give you the talk so you don't have to come to my talk if you listen to this. But TLDR will be smart clients if you have long running applications. If you're living inside of the app, like Notion, if you're in Slack, you should have a smart client. If you're just visiting for a quick browse, for example, like a e-commerce website like Amazon, then you should probably bias towards a smart server application. But there's a lot of nuances in there. There's a lot of technologies to discuss and a lot of different companies. I worked at a few of them, for example, AWS Amplify that has a smart client offering that you can use, which is really cool. You know, now you're getting things like Figma getting acquired for $20 billion to build. Figma is a smart client application, right? That you can have collaboration and, you know, you're basically just downloading a very big piece of software every time you go to figma.com. And that's a really cool paradigm to see, but it's not right for every application.
Yeah, that's true. I also think that this will be very interesting topic for our community, since like we are focused mostly around Polish community here, but we have that series we record every 2 weeks and we share all the news related to front-end development mostly. Do you feel like you are a front-end developer or more a full-stack developer or back-end developer? Where are you on the spectrum?
I think front-end and back-end are outdated terms. I don't like describing in those terms. I think people these days, especially in US startups, have migrated towards product versus platform developer. So if you're a product developer, you are capable of developing a feature all the way from back-end to front-end, right? Because it's stupid to have a front-end team that is, how often have you been blocked by back-end, right, as a front-end developer? It's so silly to say, oh yeah, we have the components ready, but you know the API is not ready. That is very slow, and I experienced it in my previous engineering jobs, and I realized that a lot of companies are realizing that this is not the way to have silos between companies. You want to have full stack teams where you have a front end person, you have a back end person, or the single person can take the feature delivery from front end to back end. Because guess what? Creating backends is also a lot easier with serverless functions, with software as a service, platforms as a service, that kind of stuff. So you can do the full feature delivery as a product developer. What the difference is between product and platform developer is, platform is where you start dealing with Kubernetes and all the scalability issues and the reliability issues that product developers don't really want to focus on. Product developers want to build on top of the platform, but you want to ship features. You don't want to ship vague things like scalability. You don't want to be an SRE. You don't want to, you might have to do a bit of migrations, but you don't want to be a DBA, right? You don't want to worry about like indexing and monitoring and all that. You should just be shipping features because that is what is ultimately your user is going to experience. So I instead of front end versus back end, I like to talk about product versus platform. I am primarily a product developer, but I have been dabbling a little bit in platform.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I was thinking about mixing this a little bit with one of the projects that you are involved in, which is called Temporal. Because this is something, yes, as far as I understand, this is something that actually improves and simplifies the backend part and like the stuff that is not very common for frontend developers. It makes it really easy. Or can you point me in the right direction to let me better understand what Temporal is actually?
Yeah, Temporal is a workflow engine, and most people have not come across workflow engines, but you have written poorly implemented versions of them. A workflow engine takes a task and proceeds it through a series of steps. And for Temporal, it's defined in code. In other systems like AWS Simple Workflow or Apache Airflow, it would be defined as a DAG, a directed acyclic graph. You can draw it in JSON. There's a lot of boxes and arrows that you can click. Basically, just saying, if this happens, then that, then you fan out to this other thing, wait for all of them to finish, then you proceed to the next thing. Anything that's a long-running process that you have multiple steps, you benefit from putting inside of a workflow engine. What is the alternative to a workflow engine? It would be setting up a bunch of cron jobs that scan a database for state changes. And when the state changes, you know, you pick it up but at the next cron run, and then you proceed to the next state in mind. And so that is very hard to version and audit and debug. So if you move all that kind of code into a single workflow engine like Temporal, then you would be able to test it. You'll be able to skip time and test it and version and migrate all these kinds of workflow because it's long-running asynchronous code. It checkpoints, you have to run code and checkpoint it. So another name for it is durable functions, right? If you could run your functions, and if you want to sleep for, let's say, 2 days and then wake up again and do something else, that sleep should not be persisted in memory. It should be persisted to database. And it should not consume resources while it's sleeping. It should wind down and it should resume and recover. And it should also be massively horizontally scalable, right? So if you have a spike of a million of these requests, you should be able to farm it out to a fleet of workers all at the same time with the same exact code. And that's essentially what a workflow engine is. So this technology was developed at Uber, where it actually runs 300 use cases at Uber, from Uber marketing to Uber delivery. My favorite example is Uber Eats, right? One function can model the entire workflow from matching the restaurant and the order, and then matching the restaurant and the driver, getting the pickup, getting the drop off, tipping, payment, receipts, reviews, all that stuff. That is a one very long running workflow that you can model as a single function instead of a series of 100 different small little functions that's all over the place. It's very messy, very hard to maintain. So anything that's long running like that, anything that involves a transaction where you need to roll back if one part of the transaction fails, there's a lot of different small little use cases like that that you can explore. And so I think I'm not so concerned about temporal as a technology. I'm concerned that people don't understand workflow engines in general. So I like to tell people about that so that they can explore the space. It's a capability that you don't know you don't have until you learn about it.
Yeah, it's like the same story with most of the abstractions that people are talking about, but actually don't know where to use it. I really like the project, and how is it connected with your work at Airbyte? Like, is it your internal product or?
So I used to work at Temporal. Temporal is a company and an open source project. I used to work there, and then I recently moved from Temporal to Airbyte. Basically, Airbyte so there are a bunch of companies that are building on top of Temporal. Temporal is one of the fastest growing companies I've ever been a part of. The only company that was growing faster than Temporal was Airbyte. So when I saw the growth metrics, I was like, okay, wow, this is super interesting. And they gave me a very good offer, so I jumped ship. So Airbyte is a data ETL company, right? You have a bunch of data sources in all over your company. You know, the average company has 100 different SaaS services. All of them are siloed databases. If you want to do analysis across all of them, you have to extract it into a data warehouse. So Airbyte is an open source project of connectors that connects to the largest community of open source connectors available, and then syncs them across into your data warehouse at understood intervals with monitoring, retries, all that logic. And the scheduler is Temporal. So it's basically, you know, I went up one level of abstraction in terms of the use case, but then applied to the data engineering field, which is another thing that traditional web developers have not really come across that much. If you're not in the data world, you don't know about it. If you are in the data world, you're completely overwhelmed by the number tools because there's so much money to be made. You know, Snowflake with $100 billion, Databricks with $60-something billion. Like, there's just a lot of there's a lot of money flowing into this field. And it's surprising how late you learn about it only at big companies.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, I remember there was one talk titled, it was given by Kitze or something like someone like that, related, not
Kitze gives very good talks.
Yeah, you are not Facebook, or was it called like that? So
yes, most companies are not Facebook.
Yeah,
correct. But they're at the same time, you want to make money by serving big companies. You know what I mean? Like, not Facebook size, but Fortune 500. That is, if you are running a company, if you're running a consultancy, if you're working in a company, you want to solve big problems because the big problems have big money. And if you only solve small problems, that like hobbyists, you know, side project type of things, there's no money.
It sounds like
it's not zero money, right? But it's less money.
That sounds like a good advice for developers in general. And basically, I want to go towards the topic of the book that you published recently, Coding Career Handbook for Junior to Senior Developers. What inspired you to write it, and what can we find inside? I definitely want to get my hands on the book and read it, because I tend to train people a lot, and a lot of people come to me for advices. I would just direct them to the book, so read it.
Yeah, thanks so much. What got me to write it? So I decided to write a book. I wanted to make some side projects that actually was for money and not for free. So I wanted to make money online for the first time, and I decided to put a poll. I said, I can write a book on a number of these things. Can you help me choose? And the first choice was actually the most popular one, which I knew I understood, which is the React and TypeScript book. I had been running the React TypeScript cheat sheet. There's 30,000 GitHub stars on that cheat sheet. I know that people know me for React and TypeScript, and I would probably have a validated audience that I can just reach out to and say, like, hey, I have now turned this thing into a book. Please buy it. And if you've benefited from it, please throw some money my way. But the second most popular choice on that poll was career advice, because I had had a very good career. People, you know, like what I do and want to think about and learn from my secrets. And a lot of people wrote in, even though it didn't win the poll, they wrote in and saying, I know the first one is going to win, but you know, please, can you write the second book? So I really like that. I like the, when people are motivated enough to write instead of just vote, they're really expressing some strong preference that they will pay money for this. So I ended up choosing that instead of the technical book, and then went deep in for 2 months writing it, basically covering all of the advice that I've heard for myself, from other people, my own mentors, and from Hacker News. So one of my friends, when he read the book, he said, this is basically Hacker News, the good parts. Like, what if you read everything and just compiled it so that it's approachable, you can read from start to finish, and you have been initiated into what most developers should know after they get their first job. You know, they're very much, I think there's a lot of focus on people getting jobs, interview practice, algorithms practice, you know, your roadmap to becoming a web developer. Getting that first job is great. But I think people are very underserved after the first job, going to their next job, going to senior, and building a career that's going to last them for a long time. And so I really focus on that. I focus on the algorithm of growth. Why is it that we only judge developers by years of experience? It's because we don't have any other algorithm of growing. So how can we change the slope of your progress?
That's a great mission. Actually, it relates very well with recent research regarding the burnout factor inside of IT world. There's a lot of people facing the challenges of coping with like pressure, challenges related to remote work, etc. Like, do you agree with that? Like, do you find some signals from your communities that like people don't know how to progress in the career? And can you share something related to that?
For remote work or just in
general? In general, the topic of burnout. Like, I remember one of your presentations focused on operating system.
The operating system of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I think that this is hard to talk about because developers like to pretend they're machines, and guys don't like to talk about their feelings. It is embarrassing to say that you cannot deliver 24/7, you know, and be a machine, you know. But I see that when you don't tend to the human and emotional needs of yourself, you will burn out and lose interest in coding, lose the ability to code, lose interest in just life in general. And it's really sad, you know, like you have the ability to contribute so much value to the world, but because you didn't slow down, take care of yourself, didn't find it okay to talk about your feelings and to take some time for yourself, that you burned out. So I always call this the operating system of you. So the basic thesis is, it doesn't matter if you like or don't like my advice. Let's just say there's a perfect book of advice that I can give to you. Do you have the ability to take that advice and improve your life? And if the answer is no, it's probably because you don't have a system of implementing that and incorporating it into your life such that you have balance and you have longevity. Because ultimately, you know, I looked at John Carmack, I look at Bill Gates, you know, some of the biggest names in the field. Bill Gates is like the number one thing that I wish I did better when I was, you know, younger is I wish I slept more. Like, you know, Scott Hanselman, who is basically like, you know, head of, you know, market developer relations for Microsoft. He's like, take care of your hands. That is my advice. It's not about coding. It is not about integration testing or types or programming languages, whatever. Just take care of yourself, because if you want to be like the number one thing in this game, if you want to win the game, you have to stay in the game. Number one way to stay in the game is take care of yourself, because it doesn't matter if you like don't get to senior level in 5 years or whatever. How do you stay in this game for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, right? There are all these, some of the top voted Hacker News posts, these guys on at Google who are like, yeah, I worked really hard. I'm at like L6 at Google. I'm making like, you know, ridiculous amounts of money, but I hate my job. I hate my life. That is so sad. you have, you know, that you can do better than that, and you deserve better than that. So I always talk about the operating system of you. So that's why it's the last chapter of my book. That's why I've done a few talks about it, because I think it's important for a guy to talk about it, because you know, it's a lot of women talk about it, but maybe it's not so relatable to guys. And then it's also important for people to understand, like, it's not always about code, even though, yes, the code stuff is important and very fun.
I think that after this introduction, you can expect a lot of interesting discussions in the couloirs on the conference. I mean, do you plan to stay for the after parties, or will you be available during the before party before the conference, or are you just going here and then running
before party? Yes. I'm going to a company retreat in Mexico right after the conference. So the your team has kindly helped me book the flight for that, but I don't know when I leave. When is the conference end?
Conference what is 6 and 7 October.
October?
Yeah. I hope I didn't make a mistake.
I know. Okay. So yeah, it's end on a Friday. So yes, I'll be around on the Friday night. Yeah, it's just like when I'm flying halfway around the world for this, like I have to factor in travel time, and that can be annoying.
Yeah, but I can imagine your schedule is really busy. How was it during the pandemic? Actually, I know that this is question probably that conference guys are getting a lot. But how did you survive during the pandemic and no flight policy?
It was great, because you don't. No, there's no conferences, right? So you're just at home, you're spending time with your family. I made the most money I ever made during the pandemic, and I think I was the healthiest, because I was just went for a lot of runs, and you know, I wasn't traveling at all. So you know, obviously a pandemic was terrible for most people, but I was fine. maybe it's hard to you know, do meetings and go out on dates and stuff like that. I had no problems. I think I had been working for about 4 years remotely before the pandemic, so I had no adjustment issues. But I know a lot of people went through a lot of difficulty there, so I don't want to make light of that.
Yeah, that's true. Related to that, I had a question in mind, but now I forgot it. Related to the career advices, and basically your attendance in the on the conferences and the participation in the community, you are involved in like two or three communities, if I'm right, or even it's hard to count always, like the communities are mixed and connected,
know, they overlap a lot. I'll say my main what's the question?
Yeah, the question is basically related to all your conference talks. When you give a talk, people approach you after the talk usually. So do you remember some interesting questions you get after the talk, or something that surprised you? Or maybe there's some talk that you are especially proud of?
I have one talk that is, I know it's my best talk, and it may be the best talk that I may ever give. And so that is the JSConf Asia 2018 talk, Getting Closure on Hooks. It is where I start with an empty screen and I write a clone of React in 30 minutes. And I have something displaying on the screen at the end. And people have constantly, they're still talking about me today. When they first meet me, they'll say, "I know you from that talk." And that is one of the most impressive talks that I've done. So I may not ever give a better talk than that. So if you want to see,
Watched it. I watch a lot of stuff, but the title definitely sticks. And I like the feeling when people see, like, okay, you just uncovered all the magic for me. I now I understand what I'm working with for like last 3 years. Yeah. So
that is why a talk is worthwhile. I think there's a lot of talks that are not worth your time, because you don't remember them.
Yeah.
Like the next day. The best talks give you some insight that have reframed everything that you thought you knew, and give you a framework to think about, new insights, or it's like a new launch of a new project that's going to change the way that you think about how you do things. That is really worth your while. Obviously, it's very hard to do every single day, but you know, there are a few talks that change your life. And I really hope to try to do more of those talks instead of normal, you know, forgettable talks. It's very hard to identify. I don't think I have mastered it, but I'm trying to do it, because what's the point of giving talks if you don't try?
Yeah, I also I remember I liked the talk you gave titled "The Third Age of JavaScript." You get that little chart with colors showing what happened over the time, and yeah, if you work in IT for a long time, you basically don't notice that. So that was a really nice overview of what's happening.
Is this a common knowledge in Poland about boiling the frog? Is this an analogy understood?
Yes. People will know what it means.
Exactly. So. I think in tech, when time passes and, you know, you see all these announcements on a day-to-day basis, we are the frogs in the water slowly getting boiled. But we very often don't really step out of the pot and take a look at what is happening over the past 2-3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20, 30 years. And when you see that long run trend, it really changes your mind about what to bet on and what is going. Like it becomes exciting. You're part of history. You're part of something that is evolving and not static. And I try to be optimistic. I think there's a lot of senior developers who have seen pendulums swinging back and forth and back and forth, and you're like, oh my god, like another framework. Like, who cares? You know, I'm just gonna use my old thing, and that is fine. But you should understand that we always are trying to improve the way that we work, and we will fail a lot. But the ones that succeed will change software forever. One of my favorite facts is Git, like, you know, Git from Linus Torvalds. It's 15 years old. There was a time before Git, and
that's true. Time before Git. I need to steal this quote.
And you know the old school people would be like, yeah, SVN is better, like Mercurial is better. I don't care, like. Whatever it was, Git like was simple enough and changed software forever. And there's things happening right now that is being launched at this conference, launched at other conferences and talks that will change software forever. You just don't know it yet.
Yeah, I think I will use the occasion and actually ask you about your perspective on the React ecosystem. Like, there is a lot of people listening to us right now, thinking, but basically working with React on a daily basis, and you have a lot of perspective, because I've seen your talk relating the new JavaScript runtimes. That was one of the first talks related to that, because it was like, okay, it is one month first, old. So what do you think about React ecosystem right now? Like, are we fine, or are we getting worse?
Oh, wow. That's a leading question.
Sorry.
So I don't know if you noticed. So people who have watched my stuff for a while, I stopped giving React specific talks about 2 years ago, because I think React is boring, and I think that's a good thing. And this is something I've said before, so I don't think it would be super controversial. Because React has 3 million users, 3 million developers, it cannot rock the boat. The primary thing that React ships is stability, right? What happened between React 16 and 18 is React 17. Why is no one talking about React 17? Because it was a very boring change. And that boringness was a feat of engineering. It got rid of a lot of things. It changed a bunch of stuff under the hood, but most people completely not aware of it, and that's fine. That is React's main job, is to not rock the boat, because it's going to make a lot of people upset. But at the same time, you know, I think it's definitely, like, you know, captured by its own popularity and unable to experiment without a lot of people having a say. And, you know, I think that can be a bit frustrating sometimes. As we were speaking, a lot of people have been concerned with React hooks, particularly use effect, which is the side effect hook. It's kind of like, you know, we have this perfect system if you sweep all the complexity under one rug, and the rug was use effect. And people are like, okay, fine. This hook system is great. We'll move the whole ecosystem over to it. But then now people are complaining about use effects. Like, we knew about this 4 years ago. It's still a problem now. So in April, the React team announced a fix for it called use event. And yesterday they killed it. So it's a lot of whiplash, a lot of like,
oh, I didn't know
here
that.
Now. And then, yesterday. We're moving here now, and then okay, like there's a new problem here. Okay, here's the fix, and then the fix is wrong, and this has happened 3-4 times in React's history. So like it is a lot of churn, but like look, that's what happens. That's how you have to move in one of the biggest open source projects of all time. You have to move this forward in some way, and there is a small team of like 5 people that's doing this. So it's really amazing, and I wouldn't do it. You couldn't pay me enough to do it. I think it'd be interesting that you know they're hiring the one I love to call so there's a job called the manager of the React team, right? It seems like a very prestigious job. It seems like people would love to do it, but I call it the defense against the dark arts job. So if you read Harry Potter, every single year there's a new defense against the dark arts teacher because it's cursed. It's everything, every year there's something wrong with it. So every year there's a new React team manager because it is a horribly difficult and impossible job to do. Okay, one last thing about this. A lot of people would choose React because of the React ecosystem, and I think that is correct. I think it's in a really good place. Next.js and Vercel have essentially acqui-hired React from Facebook. Because a lot of people were like, I don't want to use React because of Facebook. Like it's slowly moving over in terms of power to Vercel. It's becoming a multi-company product and open source project. And that is a good thing for React. Because now React will finally take on all the problems that React is typically not face, like bundling, like server-side rendering. You know, typically, like in the past, React only had like 3 APIs for server-side rendering. It was not well supported. Didn't have a strategy for smooth loading of data. A lot of problems. And now Next.js is essentially the meta framework that will make React production ready. And what they call it is building the SDK for the web. And I truly believe like that is the best outcome for React. And so because React is so well served by Vercel, it's actually a really good bet to bet on for production use cases. And then also, of course, the ecosystem, right? If you want accessible components, you have Chakra UI, you have React Aria, you have a bunch of these like smaller projects that you know that you want to work with. I think that's really good. Where React's ecosystem comes into the problem of is when you have to wrap every single tool out there into a React dash whatever wrapper, like React-D3, X-State, whatever, just to fit it inside of React's functional paradigm. And that's where, you know, I've been exploring Svelte, other people have been exploring SolidJS, Vue.js, for a different take on this situation where it's just, it needs to work nicer with HTML and JavaScript because those are the things that will last. You know, there'll be a day when React goes away as well. And the things that are last will be web standards. So you want to stick as close to web standards as possible. And I think the new crop of frameworks are basically experimenting and exploring how to do that while offering the same developer experience that React has. So that's my long spiel.
That was perfect answer. I believe after this talk, people definitely will recognize you here in Poland. So if someone never heard about Swix, please come to the conference, attend the talk, and ask some smart questions after that. This will be your first time in Poland, right?
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
Any expectations? I've heard a lot from,
any expectations? I don't know, actually. I've never been... Is Marie Curie Polish?
Yes, there are controversies about that, but yeah, we believe she's Polish.
Yeah, so like I know a lot of smart people from Poland. That's the only thing that I know, and obviously a lot of good developers as well. But I've never been. I don't even know what the landmarks are. I know about Warsaw, but that's about it.
if you watch our talk from yesterday, I was talking with Kent Dodds also. I asked about the first visit in Poland. He will be here first time also, and definitely one advice: pack warm clothes because the weather here can be really surprising. And apart from that, Gdańsk is a really good place to be, and there is a lot of cool stuff to do, and just come here and you will be guided, and we are really nice.
the main thing I'm surprised by is how strong of an English, like I think Polish people have better English than French.
Yeah, I can agree.
Do you learn I know French.
I also know French, so yeah. I know the difference, and I know how hard it is to talk in English with French people. So yeah.
Yeah. Do you learn English at a very early age?
Yes, we learn English from the very beginning. I believe primary school.
Yeah.
That's how it is
so
here.
I have a fun story about that. So Singapore, you know, I come from Singapore. I don't come from the US. Out of all the Southeast Asian countries, Singapore intentionally decided to make everybody learn English and speak it as a first language. And it's so strong that my Chinese sucks. I'm English first, you know? And that was a conscious decision made 40, 50 years ago that changed the whole country's economic prosperity. And I feel like, you know, I think the same thing for Poland versus the other Eastern European countries. You know, if you don't have a good command of English, there's just a part of the economy you will not participate in.
Yeah, that's a good point. So yeah, you can expect that you can talk with a lot of people during the after parties or before parties, even between the talks. So we are getting on time with the finish of this session. So thank you very much for all the insights, all the advices. I hope people will go and buy your book once. Is it published already? Or
yes, it's published. It's at learninpublic.org, and you can ask me for a coupon code if you need purchasing parity. Just DM me, or you can buy it off the shelf. A lot of companies expense it, and you know, I do offer packages for companies and teams.
Yeah, I will definitely. We can talk about it later. So yeah, thank you very much once again, and see you in 1 week, actually. 1 week or so. 1 week and 1 day.
Yeah, 1 week.
Yeah. Good luck, and take care. Bye.
Take care.